Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you're making plans to get to church this weekend. You need a home church. You need to be actively engaged in that home church. You need to encourage others to love and good deeds and be encouraged to love and good deeds by those other people. You need to pray and worship and fellowship and study and all of that, which is part of body life. If you don't have a place where you get to do all that on a regular basis, you need to go out there and find one. If you're actively looking right now for someplace like that and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, I extend to you on behalf of all the folks there to come on over to Elkhart East and join us. Check us out. We'd love to have you. Fridays, you know, I'm also in the habit of saying a big thank you to all of you who support Into the Word financially. Keep us on this radio station. One of the families that I appreciate very much for that would be Mike and Andrea Ritter, the owners of Great Lakes Heating and Air Conditioning. Appreciate them a lot, and I hope that you would show your thanks to them if you're already a customer of theirs for doing that. And if you're not, check them out. I'm sure that they could help you out with whatever issue you might have. Let's go ahead and open today, not to Judges, but to 1 Samuel. Here's the deal, folks. Last time we were together in 1 Samuel chapter 13, we found out that because of sin, the Israelis came under 40 years of oppression by the Philistines over on the west coastline of Israel. And God conceived supernaturally and prophesied supernaturally about a future judge that would help deal with some of that oppression. He would start dealing with that oppression when he grew up, the young man Shimshon or Samson. I am of the opinion that right around that same time as Samson's conception, perhaps even a little bit before Samson's conception, we have another conception that is going to be another judge that will help put down the Philistine oppression and then assist in the transition to the kingdom period that follows the Philistine oppression period. That guy's name is going to be Shamuel, Samuel. And so we're going to go to his origin story today, starting in 1 Samuel chapter 1. So it is my very strong and considered opinion that Samuel and Samson were born right around the same time. Chapter 1 of Samuel, 1 Samuel. There was a certain man of Ramathaim Zophim of the hill country of Ephraim. Now notice, this is Ephraim, not Benjamin. So it is not the Ramah that is north of Jerusalem that was part of Benjamin. This is a Ramathaim that is somewhere up by Bethel, very close to Bethel, about 20-some miles south of Shiloh. It's just barely in Ephraimite territory. It's right on the borderland. So there's a certain guy living there whose name was Elkanah, the son of Jehoram, the son of Elihu, son of Tohu, son of Zuf. And that Zuf there may be, in fact, related to the name Zophim, so that Ramathaim is the town where Zuf kind of settled around. But look at the last thing in that line, and Ephraimite. Now, it doesn't say he's an Ephraimite, It says he's an Ephrathite. Now, Ephrathah is actually the region right around Bethlehem in Judah. So there is a possibility that way back in time, Zuf lived in Ephrah, down near Bethlehem. And he moved up to this new place and reestablished his family up here at Ramathaim, named after his arrival, Zufim. That's a possibility. Now, regardless of whether he started out at Bethlehem and ended up in Ephraimite territory, he is not a Judean by ethnicity, nor is he an Ephraimite by ethnicity. The First Chronicles chapter 6 genealogy for Samuel shows that this is a Levite line. So this is a Levitical family of the Korahite line. So this was the Levitical line that was originally in charge of carrying the holy items of the tabernacle from point A to point B. Once they settled down in a place like Shiloh, for example, there was not as much need for them to be used. And so it does not appear to me that this guy is actively involved in Levitical work. Let's read verse 2. He had two wives. Now that's a bit of a red flag because principally it's supposed to be one man, one woman together for a lifetime. But there seems to be, and I'm going to put it in air quotes here, legitimate reason for him to have two wives. And that would be because his preferred wife, his first wife, the wife that he loves the most, can't have babies. And that is exceptionally problematic. And so a secondary wife was tolerated in those situations. And we know that there are examples of that in past Israeli history. So he had two wives. The name of the one, and I actually think it has the carries the sense of the first, was Hannah. Kana is the way it comes out a little bit closer in Hebrew, and it's the word for grace in Hebrew. The name of the other wife, the second wife, I believe, Penina, which is Hebrew for a pearl. Penina had children, but Hannah had no children. And so as I've made very clear, I think that's the reason why there's two women in this story, is because Hannah proved to be childless. This man used to go up year by year from his city, Ramathaim Zophim, to worship and to sacrifice to he who is of the armies. This is Yahweh Tzabaoth, is the Hebrew. It's God's military title that is going to get used a lot now from this point forward in our stories. But he used to go up and to sacrifice at Shiloh. Shiloh is where the tabernacle has been located since the time of Joshua and Eleazar the high priest, shortly after the Israelites came into the promised land. The singular time of worship that we're talking about here seems to be, can't prove it, but seems to be the Feast of Tabernacles. And the reason why I think it seems to be that is because that's the harvest festival of the three mandatory festivals. Remember, we're in the period of the judges. Everybody's flying by the seat of their pants. They're doing whatever they feel like. They're making up their own little rules. The rules of the covenant said that every adult male of physical capability was supposed to go to the place of worship at Passover in the spring, Pentecost at the end of spring, the beginning of summer, and at the Feast of Tabernacles. Those were the three times. But here, this guy's habit is to go up one time, even though it's only about 20 miles or so from his home base. So that's one day's easy travel. And so Feast of Tabernacles seems to be the most obvious one that he would go to. Now we introduce, for the first time, characters that we will talk a lot about in this story. Where the two sons of Eli, or Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests of He Who Is. Now, Eli, as this story begins, seems to have only recently become high priest. He is somewhere in his 50s. I can't tell you right off the top of my head exactly where in the 50s. That can be worked out later because of his death date has an age attached to it. But that probably means that his boys, Hophni and Phinehas, are in their 30s. Roughly 20 years or so younger than him. Eli is acting more as a supervisor for everything going on at the tabernacle. It's his sons that are being the hands-on guys. Verse 4. On the day when Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. So this was his practice. Again, sounds like Feast of Tabernacles to me. They'd have a big celebration, sacrifice animals, and offer bread sacrifices as well, grain sacrifices, and thanksgiving to God. But the portions that would come back to the worshiper, he would divide them up with his wife that has kids and the kids he shares with her. However, verse 5 tells us, but to Hannah he gave a double portion. Now, a double portion is not so that you have more than enough to eat. Double portion is emblematic. It is indicative. It is symbolic of the firstborn right. It is a symbol of inheritance. And so he is basically signaling, I wish I had a son with you. Have the double portion in this celebration. And it goes on to say, because he loved her, although He Who Is had closed her womb. So they believe that the things that happened in life was because God willed it. And so the fact that she couldn't have babies, that must be God's will. But it didn't matter to him. He loved her greatly and wished that she could have been the mother of his heir. So their relationship's pretty good. Verse 6, though, we got a problem with the secondary wife. Her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her because He Who Is had closed her womb. So Peninnah is just mean. It reminds me a little bit of the story of Sarah and Tamar. When Tamar got pregnant, she started being mean and nasty to Sarah. So much so that eventually Sarah started abusing her back because Sarah was the superior. She was the senior female in the household. And Tamar takes off on her own. You remember that from the earlier Book of Genesis stories? So Peninnah is just ruthless, mean. And it just causes Hannah to sob because it just happens over and over and over again. Verse 7, so it went on year by year. So we're not talking about just once or twice. We're talking about many years in a row Penina has multiple sons, multiple daughters. So if you add the little time in between pregnancies, this has probably been going on at least 6, 7, 8 years. At least. So I went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of he who is, the house here is a representation of the tabernacle, she used to provoke her. So apparently got really bad at these visits to the place of worship. And therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. So she would just cry her eyes out. Didn't matter. She was being given this double portion by the man she loves and who loves her. She just cries because she's broken, brokenhearted. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? You got to be touched by that. He loves her greatly and tries to communicate that to her. He says, it does not matter that you've never borne me a single son. I love you. I love you more than 10 babies you could have had with me. That's a big deal. So verse number 9. This is where the story actually begins. And I say this is probably very early in the Philistine oppression. They probably didn't feel the oppression all that much up at Ramathaim Zophim, because they're up in the actual hill, central hill country of Ephraim. The Philistines are probably not raiding past the valleys down in the Shephelah. But you remember I also said that I think that Eli's tenure as high priest started around the same time as that 20 year or 40 years of oppression by the Philistines. So this is all very early in Eli's leadership that this part of the story happens. Verse number 9. After they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. Now, Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of He Who Is. Now, that means at the front gate area. There'd be like a partition of veil that you'd have to kind of go around in order to see the tabernacle building. And I'm not altogether certain whether or not the ladies were allowed to go around that veil shield or if they just stayed right at the front gate on the outside side of the veil. But Eli would have been situated on some sort of stool, apparently, where he can be close by to that entry point where people are coming in. So she, meaning Hannah, was deeply distressed and prayed to He Who Is and wept bitterly. So this is after years of abuse by Penina. And so she vowed a vow and said, Oh, Yahweh Tzabaoth, oh, He Who Is over the armies, God's military title, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a son, then I will give him to He Who Is all the days of his life, and no razor shall touch his head. So she makes the voluntary offer of becoming a Nazarite herself during the pregnancy, and of having her son become a lifelong Nazarite, and to not be the heir to Elkanah, because he can't be. He would have older half-brothers. But she would give him to the service of the tabernacle itself, the service of He Who Is full-time. Now, he is from a Levitical family. So it's possible that Elkanah might have been doing part-time service to the Lord anyway. But Hannah is promising full-time service of a Nazarite. Verse 12. As she continued praying before he who is, Eli observed her mouth. So she is like moving her lips, but no sound is coming out. Hannah was speaking in her heart, only her lips moved and her voice was not heard. So she's very upset. She might be even shaking a little bit. And her mouth is moving, nothing's coming out. And so Eli makes an assumption that was inappropriate. Eli took her to be a drunken woman. Now, we'll find out later that his own boys have got an issue along that line. That will be pretty clear. But right now, he's kind of keeping an eye on things like that, and he's not happy about it. Eli said to her, "How long will you be go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered, "No, my lord. I'm a woman troubled in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink." Sounds to me like she was already doing the Nazarite vow as part of her, "Please God, give me a baby boy." "I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I've been pouring out my soul before he who is. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman." The text actually uses the word Belial that we've seen in other places, the sons of Belial, meaning worthless people, worthless men. Here, it's Ish-Belial, Isha-Belial, a woman that's worthless. "For all along, I've been speaking out of great anxiety and vexation." So she doesn't go into the detail of what her request is, apparently. She just simply says, "I've got something really big on my heart, and that's what's causing me to be this way with such fervor in my prayers. That's what it's about." And so Eli the high priest answered, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition that you have made to him." So he puts a little blessing on her, says, "May God give you your request." And that apparently makes her happy, that the high priest would say those words. So she said, "Let your servant find favor in your eyes." And that word favor there is related to her word, her name, Hannah. It's the word for grace, Chen. Chen. So let your servant find Chen, favor in your eyes. And then the woman went away and ate, and her face was no longer sad. And I'm sure Elkanah was very happy about that and wondered what the change was. Because last time he saw her, she was bawling her eyes out. And now she's all happy and apparently at peace. Well, he's about to find out why. They rose early in the morning, worshiped before he who is. Then they went back to their house at Ramah, or Ramathayim Zophim, in southern Ephraim. Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and their sexual relationship had been normal anyway. They just couldn't have babies together. But this time, the Lord remembered her. And in due time, Hannah, Grace, conceived and bore a son. So this time, after their visit to Shiloh, she gets pregnant. And no doubt, both of them very excited about that. And eventually the baby is born, and she called his name Shamuel. Sham is the word for hear. El is the generic word for God in the singular. So God heard, for she said, "I've asked for him from he who is." So this is how Samuel gets his start. Next part of the story happens during the 3-year period of Samuel's life. The man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to he who is the yearly sacrifice and to pay his vow. So this would be a year later. So Samuel is about 3 months old, right? But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, "As soon as the child is weaned, I will bring him, so that he may appear in the presence of he who is and dwell there forever." Now, the text doesn't explain to us whether or not she'd already explained to Elkanah about her promise. She must have explained something because she's been living as a Nazarite during her pregnancy, and then now she's keeping the baby boy as a Nazarite. So he must be brought in on some of the detail. But as to him becoming a full-time part of the tabernacle staff, I don't know if this is the first time he's heard about that. But his response is this: Elkanah, her husband, said to her, "Do what seems best to you. Wait until you've weaned him. Only may he who is establish his word." So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. Now, I have zero doubt that he was off mother's milk within that second year of his life. But there seems to be this tradition that weaning is a formal celebration at the third birthday. And so this next part, I think, happens right around the time he turns 3. So when she'd weaned him, she took him up, meaning to the tabernacle, with her, along with a 3-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine. And she brought him to the house of he who is at Shiloh. So right around Samuel's 3rd birthday, I think, mom packs him up and brings him to the place where he will live for the rest of his youth and become God's man.